If you want to learn soft field technique, go fly off a grass runway. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. We're here to talk about flight training today, as we are many Mondays. And in particular, Bob's column in the May edition of Over the Airwaves entitled Airwork, Soft Field Operations. And Bob, thanks for taking some time out today.
Paul, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
Bob, I know that every private pilot student has to at least read about this, making soft field landings, soft field takeoffs, and they have to know the differentiation between soft field and short field, which some pilots get confused. But as part of your push for scenario-based training, you tie this back not so much to just general airplane knowledge as part of emergency preparation. Explain why that's the case.
Well, you know, it gets back to weaknesses within the traditional flight training community, where most all of the training that we're doing is in either on concrete or blacktop paved runways. And we use those same runways for doing simple, straightforward takeoff and landings, but we also do simulated short field operations and soft field operations, both takeoff and landings, on these paved runways. And while we do have an opportunity to impart some academic knowledge, what the student experiences on those paved runways is nothing, as you know, nothing compared to operating on real grass or real soft or wet fields. And I'm a strong believer in getting our flight training community off the blacktop and concrete and getting them out into real grass operations for the benefit of the student for lots of reasons. One, to show them what this is really like, and two, in the hopefully unlikely event that they do have an engine failure, they may have to make that first emergency landing on a very soft runway, and it's best that they know how to do it from actual experience.
Well, my primary training was in tail draggers, so I kind of had an advantage there. I trained at a little airport where they had a north-south oriented paved runway, but they had kept the space next to it clear and maintained and manicured as a turf run, you know, a grass runway. And so on final, you know, or on base or final, you would call which of the two you were going to choose to land on. But I remember in the tail draggers, it was one thing to get, you know, we started first on the grass and then graduated to the runway as we demonstrated the ability to come down without chirping it too much. But it was a little different experience for me when I went up in a Cessna for the first time in a tricycle gear and tried the same kinds of operations off grass strips with tricycle gear. And I can't really explain the feeling too much, except that I was more aware of the nose gear. And I think that what may happen is it dawned on me at that point that the reason that startled me, that difference in feeling, was that any of the places I had rented a tricycle gear aircraft or a more modern aircraft, they had a policy about not landing on grass.
Well, you know, I think that's a popular misconception, and I don't know if it's promulgated by flight schools that are just resistant to going out on grass, telling their students that the airplane is not insured for non-paved runways. I haven't found an insurance company yet in my informal surveys that are saying that indeed is a prohibition. There's nothing wrong with grass. A runway is a runway. I mean, sure, they may not like us going off into totally unimproved areas like river bottoms in Alaska. That's a little bit different. But if it's an airport and it has a turf runway, then fine. In fact, it's generally much easier on the gear on the grass than it is on tires than it is on concrete. But back to the point with the tail draggers, and man, I mean, all of us love tail draggers, but in most cases, those tail draggers are getting off in fairly short order in terms of total ground roll. You get a heavier Cessna, even a Cessna 172, you know, a tricycle gear, it's consuming more ground roll. Therefore, you know, you're feeling the effects of the uneven field a little bit longer. So that's one of the major differences. What you described as an airport with a grass strip alongside of a paved strip, I mean, that's the ideal. I think that's a wonderful operation. We have it here at the Dunkirk Airport just south of Buffalo, where they've developed a grass strip very nicely manicured right next to their runway 2, 4, and 6, and that provides a good experience for the pilots as well. But, you know, we have grass, and then we have grass that's long and uncut, grass that's wet, grass that's soft. And this requires more than just a classroom understanding of short and soft field operations. It requires genuine experience. It's in the practical test standards. Students are required to have an understanding of this, and then to take them all the way through the pilot private pilot certificate and never put them on actual grass, I think, is shortchanging the student.
Well, Bob, just in a nutshell, let's run through a kind of a generic soft field procedure for a typical general aviation aircraft, and tell us why each of the differences in the procedure from a normal paved runway is the way it is.
Well, okay, two areas. One, we're concerned about the condition of the turf. If the grass has not been cut in a week or so, or there's been heavy rains and the grass is longer, that makes a big difference on the total ground roll, both coming in, which is not such a big issue, but going back out. So I have my students listen very attentively as the tires are coming down on the grass surface. If they hear a slapping sound, you know, that kind of a sound, they can tell right off that the grass is slapping against the tires, and that's a good indication that the grass is a bit longer than freshly cut grass, and that's going to be a factor. The second thing I have them do, just as the airplane is making its first contact with the turf, is glance down at the tire. Did the tire suddenly become wet? And if it did, then we have a good indication that this field may be not hard-packed, dry turf, but it could indeed be a very soft field. Thirdly, if we have uncut grass and it's wet, now we have a genuine concern about whether or not we're going to be able to come back out of that if indeed, you know, when we go in, we may just get bogged down and we're not going to suffer any damage, but it may be a logistical nightmare trying to get out of that airport, you know, or if we have to leave the airplane there for several days or a week or more for the surface to improve, you know, that's an issue.
And if you see cattails banging against the windscreen, you're really in trouble.
Well, sure. Yeah. And there's other things that we do. We do what's called a critter check. You know, my students say, what do you mean a critter check? Well, we take a pass down on the turf, often between the trees, and see if there's any evidence of, you know, animal movement. It doesn't take a big animal to create, a disastrous situation with a landing aircraft, particularly, even a coyote or a woodchuck. It can cause problems if we hit it with a propeller. You know, considerably worse, of course, would be a deer. So that's something that we have to look at. You know, my friend Don Lee up in Alaska, Talkeetna, Alaska, runs a wonderful program for this kind of thing and very serious kind of off-field landings on river bottoms and glaciers. And I think this is great. That's highly specialized training. But short of being able to do that, all of us as instructors absolutely must get our students out. Find an area in your training area, region that, it's a safe, it's a well-used field, airport, but it's turf, and allow your students to experience that for the first time. And once they do, you know, we're going to find a lot of pilots that will find happiness going out and purchasing a tail dragger and becoming, an old world pilot the way we used to do it back in the 30s and the 40s.
Oh, thanks a lot, Bob. You just made the price go up on the 7AC I wanted to buy. Well, listen, when we come back from the break, Bob, I want to ask you, you've talked about this from an instructor's point of view or a flight school's point of view. I want to talk about a matter of student instructor etiquette. Bob Miller is my guest, back in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. And we're talking about practicing takeoffs and landings on grass. And Bob, you talked about how instructors and flight schools should have some outlet for students to get these skills and practice them in the real world. Let's talk for a moment about the student who's working in a program, doesn't want to leave the program, but needs to approach a flight instructor about being a little more assertive about wanting to get this kind of experience. What's the best way to go about that? What do you say to a flight instructor or a flight school that has told you, for example, that we're not insured to land on grass?
That's a tough one, you know, and you know, I have to go back to caveat emptor, the Latin phrase that says buyer beware. And unfortunately, the hapless student goes to the flight school and is really at their beck and call in terms of what they can and cannot do. And that's where this is such a serious problem, because the flight school or the flight instructor holds a tremendous influence over the future of tomorrow's pilots. And I don't know what to do, whether or not a student can be assertive enough to say, hey, listen, I want to get this experience, and if you won't give it to me, then I'm going to go shopping around to another flight school or another instructor that will show it to me. That's why I've always encouraged students, particularly, seek references before walking into a flight school for the first time and signing up for a lesson or lessons. Do due diligence, you know, go out and find references before signing up with a particular flight instructor or a flight school, and ask those references, did you get the kind of training that you really thought you deserved? Tell me a little bit about the variety of the training that you reserved. Do your that you expected. Go out and do your homework. And if you're finding that flight school A or instructor A just simply will not do this, then buyer beware. Go someplace else. My suggestion is to, rather than, you know, cause students to drive this solution to this problem, that let's enlighten our nation's flight schools. Let's get us all out there and providing this kind of options for our students. There's no need, as I said earlier, to limit our training to blacktop or hard paved runways. I just don't see where that is a necessity. And if we are associated with an insurance company that says no operations on grass, then we need to be shopping around for a different insurance carrier, because there are great carriers out there like USAIG. There's no restriction, and put that out of our mix of reasons for not doing it. And as is often the case, let me just say in conclusion, a number of flight instructors will not do it because they themselves were never trained on grass. They've never been on it. So, you know, how are they going to go out and train somebody else if they themselves have never been on it? So that's a case where we have, you know, almost the blind leading the blind. And an example where, you know, where one flight school can do a whole lot of damage to the industry, because they're breeding more flight instructors who themselves are limited in what they will teach.
Well, Bob, final question. If a student finds himself in an environment where grass operations are discouraged, should he feel any qualms at all about going out and finding supplemental instruction at a different flight school?
That's what I had to do. I very clearly had some limitations in my own primary training, and I shopped around and found where I could get the kind of training I wanted. In fact, every pilot, certainly every flight instructor, that has not had advanced training in different kinds of maneuvers should go out on their own and get it. I went out and sought aerobatic training just because I thought it was going to be, would be helpful to my overall base of training. And you can't get that from the average flight school. We don't offer it at Bob Miller Flight Training. I went out to Fighter Combat International out in Mesa, Arizona, and got the training. I think every serious student flight student, both at the primary level, instrument level, commercial level, ought to become his own best advocate or her own best advocate and go out and seek specialized training. If you're from Kansas and you're flying on instruments, you need to come east and take some training in the New York City Class B airspace. You know, if you're from Kansas, you need some mountain training experience and go get it. If you're from the north part of the country and you don't have a lot of experience with thunderstorms, go down to Florida and Alabama in the summertime and get some experience operating around them. Similarly, if you were trained in the South, Arizona, the Sunshine States, and you're an instrument pilot, absolutely you need training in icing conditions, in and around icing conditions to become experienced with that. And the only way to do that is to leave your flight school and the South for just long enough to come north to get that kind of specialized training. So the days of one flight school being, you know, the be-all and end-all for all training for a student, you know, it's hard for any single flight school to provide that range of training. So, yeah, we do need to shop around and get what we need in order to become proficient pilots.
And once you do get some training on grass, take advantage of this time of year to visit a few pancake fly-in breakfasts on Saturday mornings. A lot of those are on grass trips, and they're the most fun kind of all.
They are the most fun. They are absolutely the most fun.
Bob, as always, we appreciate the expertise, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
The May edition of Bob's newsletter will be available starting this coming Sunday at overtheairwaves.com. In the meantime, visit the site to sign up for an automatic email that will let you know when each new month's edition is released. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.